You're listening to Trucking Questions from the Audio Road with Kevin Rutherford. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. You can ask questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, tax, technology, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the Audio Road.
Welcome to the program. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show, well, it's all about the business of trucking. We take your calls. We answer your questions about everything trucking. Trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, you name it. We'll talk about it here on the air. All you have to do is pick up the phone and give me a call. And speaking of everything trucking, we're also expanding on that idea with our podcast network. So, you know, the beauty of the podcast network is we're able to just kind of throw things against the wall and see what works. There's so many topics we've wanted to cover over the years. And in this format, it's question and answer. I love this show. There are some other things we've wanted to do over the years, and now with the podcast network, we're able to do that. So, for example, I started a new show called The Road Scholar, and it's audio book reviews. And my first book review was Larry Winget. It's called Work for a Reason is the name of the book. Larry, a great author, six-time New York Times and Wall Street Journal best-selling author. Larry is also our keynote speaker every year at the CMC, just amazing. And over the years, Larry has also become a friend and mentor for me. So I was very excited to be able to do one of Larry's books to kick off that podcast series. I don't know how many shows we're going to do on that yet. I don't know if we're going to do one every 2 weeks or one a month. It's really, we're working through the logistics right now, but we've got lots of podcast shows going. We have three shows that are really designed for small carriers. So Getting Your Own Authority, Working with Brokers, and Rates and Lanes, three different shows. Hosts are doing a great job on those. Those are all available on our network. So check that out. Go to letstruck.com. The network will be up and running. The shows are growing. So come on over and check that out. And we are going to continue to add shows. If you have any ideas for shows, by the way, podcast type shows that would be interesting for the trucking industry, I'd love to hear your ideas. If you'd like to be a host on a show, let me know. I mean, we're training people. We're setting them up with equipment. We're helping them launch shows. If you'd like to be a co-host, I'm looking for co-hosts as well, because we've got some shows lined up with people like Bruce Mallinson, who's going to do all about engines, and Mike Beckett, who's going to do all about tires and alignment. But I could also use a co-host for those guys to kind of run the show and keep things moving so they can just answer questions. So if you're interested in any of that, check out the website. It's letstruck.com, and send me an email, and you can send it to support@letstruck.com. Let's get to some phone calls today. Let's go to Denver. Michael, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Kevin. I've put an OPS system on there, and since then I've gone to full synthetic to Mobil 1, and seems to be using a couple of gallons of that 530 weight right now every, in the first 8,000 or 9,000 miles.
I'm sorry, say that again.
Okay, I said that my truck is now using, since I went to full synthetic,
okay,
using about 2 gallons of full synthetic every 8,000 or 9,000 miles. I say every, so, but I haven't even put, you know, just one time. So since I've checked it, it's used about 2 gallons in about 8,000 or 9,000 miles.
Got it. So a gallon every 4,500 miles or so, which isn't critical, nothing to get too concerned about yet. The other thing we know is that over time, the rings will reseat to that thinner oil, and that consumption will go down some. But ultimately, if we're doing extended drains where we really don't want to change the oil, we just want to change filters and do a sample, I don't really have a problem with the truck that uses a gallon every 5,000 miles or so, because it virtually allows...
Even if the oil's at... even if the oil's at $43 a gallon?
Yeah, even so. I mean, if we think about that, that's not a really huge cost. $43 into, you know, 5,000 miles, not really that big of a deal. In fact, what is that? It's... it's less than a penny a mile. It's like eight one thousandths of a cent. So it's really, I know we think about that, go, oh my God, $43 a gallon. I got to put it in every 5,000 miles. It seems like a lot when you're paying for it. But when you, and this is why I love numbers. This is why I encourage people to have a profit and loss, because you start to understand these kind of things that we can look at this and go, oh, well, that's not even adding a penny a mile to my cost, but here's what it will allow you to do. By putting in a gallon every 5,000 and doing extended drains, it freshens the oil up and allows you to go even further before you'll ever have to change the full engine oil. So there
I got you.
There can actually be an economic benefit to consuming that much oil, and it can actually keep your costs down.
Okay, and then when did you say that the seals might reseat and stop using that much oil? About how many miles after you start using the full synthetic?
Usually 50,000 is about the max. It'll change slowly over that 50,000 mile mark, and then that's about it. When you get to 50,000 and you see what your oil consumption is, that's probably where it's going to stay.
Okay, well, I feel a lot more comfortable with that. Another question for you. I run out here in the mountains of Colorado regionally here, and you always talk about fuel mileage. What's good fuel mileage running in the mountains?
Well, we had a truck and it's hard to say. If you had to run from Denver over to,
Farmington, New Mexico.
Okay, and back. So you're in the mountains almost the whole time.
Right. Right.
I mean, that's just up and down and nonstop the whole time. Good fuel mileage in that case. What kind of trailer are you pulling and what kind of weight?
I'm pulling a grocery trailer. I pulled 75,000 pounds out there last, brought back a full trailer of dunnage, grocery store dunnage, pallets and recycled cardboard, and still got 6.7 miles to the gallon at the pump.
Okay, and that's a good number. Now, I tell you what I would shoot for. And let me give you an example. We had a truck that a small fleet reefer operator had four trucks running from Salt Lake City to Portland and Seattle. Kind of the same, quite a lot of pulls through that area. His fleet average when he came to us on his four trucks was 5.7 on his four trucks that he currently had. We built him our first signature glider. He bought our first signature glider. And the average on that signature glider in the exact same operation that his other trucks were getting 5.7, the signature glider got 8.7.
Wow. Well, let me see here. I've got a 2010 International ProStar. It's got the ISX Cummins in it. I've got the OPS going. I've got the Fast System just recently hooked up to it. I've got the Super Singles with the zero offset. I've got the Fleet air filter, and I just put on a pair of Smartway stair tires, Michelin's.
Okay.
I've done all that. And, I mean, during the middle of the summer, I've gotten as high as 9.1, 9.2 miles to the gallon running out to Nebraska.
Excellent. Really good numbers. That 6.7 for what you're doing, that is a very respectable number. My goal in that operation, and it would be tough to reach, but it could be done. My goal would be 8. Now, the problem is with the 2010, we're dealing with emission systems, and we just don't know what they might be doing to hurt our fuel economy. We can do all the other stuff, and I recommend you do. And your numbers are good. They could get better. but we've got that unknown in this operation, which are the emissions. And the ISX honestly doesn't have a great track record, but I'm glad yours is working for you. And the modifications are paying off. There's still some things you could do to it, and I would recommend that you do that. And we'll get those numbers up even better. But that's a great start. I'm looking at the clock. I'm going to get us into a break, and then we will come back, and we will get to more stuff right after this. Don't forget our year-end accounting special. If you haven't heard about this yet, grab something to write with, because it really doesn't get any better than this. You hear me say all the time, you've got to have your numbers. You know, here was a great example on that prior call where he thought that that $43 a gallon was a real problem expense-wise. And when we do the math, it's not a problem at all. It's less than a penny a mile. That's not a big concern. Having numbers helps make decisions. It puts everything in focus. So call us and get our accounting special. It's 855-800-FUEL. 855-800-3835. For just $25, we're going to get your entire year's worth of accounting done. You can't beat that. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. We're going to get right back to some phone calls. Let's head off to Texas. John, welcome to the program.
Yes. Hello, Kevin.
Yeah. What can I help you with?
Yeah. On the other show, you had a caller asking about 1099s and brokers.
Yeah.
And the conversation came up where she didn't get a 1099 from her broker. I had the same issue in 2013, but my broker, he asked me for my FEIN number. So why would he want my number if he never put me under a deduction? Or, I mean, what if he put, like, let's say 10,000 and I accidentally put 1,000, or he put 100 and I put 10,000? What happened then?
Okay, so here's the thing. There's a couple reasons why brokers might not issue a 1099. If you are incorporated, there's no requirement for them to issue you a 1099 at all, period. The IRS is so lax about issuing 1099s. The fine for not issuing a 1099 is only $50. And the IRS never follows up on it ever. So lots of companies just get lazy and they just don't issue 1099s. I don't think we should have to. I think it's a waste of time and money and everything else. Why should one company be responsible for the record keeping of another company? It's my responsibility to know my own accounting. And if that's see, the 1099 isn't for you and I. The 1099 is for the IRS. That's for them to try to track as much of the money flowing back and forth as possible so they know who to go after. That's all that is. And so there's several reasons why the broker may not issue the 1099. Why do they want your EIN? Mostly just standard practice. You know, every piece of accounting software you have, when you go to pay somebody, it wants you to fill in that kind of information. So it's pretty standard to ask for it. You know, we have all of our vendors fill out a W-9 so we know how to handle the money. So that's not uncommon, but it doesn't mean that they're going to issue a 1099 just because they have that number.
So my next question is, like, if I have an employee, I give him a 1099 and what I give him has to match what he reports. So, I mean, how do I know he's not putting that he's giving me $1 million when he only gave me $10,000.
Okay, so here's what would happen. When a company issues a 1099, they should send one copy to you, obviously, and another copy to the IRS. But let's say that they didn't send one to you. The way you would know if it was wrong is, let's say that they paid you $100,000 and you only reported $50,000. Well, there's going to be an immediate discrepancy on the tax return, and that'll get flagged and not trigger an audit, but at least trigger a question. The IRS will say, hey, we think that you got this much money. How come you only reported this much? That's where the accounting system comes into play, because companies issue incorrect 1099s all the time. And the only way to know that they issued an incorrect 1099 is to have an accounting system of your own so that you catch it. And when you catch it, you can say, no, you didn't pay me that much. You paid me this much. Here's the thing. In an audit, if the company says, no, we paid you $100,000 and you say you only paid us $50,000, it always will be the responsibility of the company issuing the 1099 to prove it. Here's why. If I say I only got $50,000, that's impossible for me to prove. I can't prove a negative. I could show you that I received $50,000, but I can't show you that I didn't receive this other money. There's no way for me to show you something that didn't happen. So it can't be my responsibility to prove this, because it's impossible for me to prove I didn't get the money. It's up to the company issuing the 1099 to prove you did get the money. Because if they paid me, then they would be able to provide documents to prove that. They would be able to provide checks and invoices and things like that. So if there's a discrepancy and the IRS catches it, it will always be up to the company issuing the 1099 to prove the discrepancy. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you answered my question.
All right, thanks for the call. Yeah, so starting in January, you'll start hearing me talk about 1099s a lot and making sure that your 1099 is correct. This is a huge problem in the industry. Lots and lots of owner-operators paying tax on money they never received because the 1099 was wrong, but they didn't have a bookkeeping system and they didn't catch it. And I've seen the mistake be as big as $10,000 and $15,000, and the owner-operator doesn't catch it. And if you think you would, you're wrong. If you don't have an accounting system, it's easy to lose $10,000. Get our startup special. I don't know how to stress it anymore. That one reason alone, get our startup special and we will make sure your 1099 is correct. Give us a call. It's 855-800-FUEL, 855-800-3835. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Kansas. Ernie, welcome to the program.
Yes. I'm wondering about some drive tires. I've got the XDA 3s, Michelins, on right now, and I'm fixing to have to get some new ones. And I know that the XDA is better rolling resistance, but I don't know. They're hard to find. I've heard you talk to people, and is there a Yokohama drive tire that's as good as the XDA?
Yeah, there is, but there's also the XDA is hard to find because they discontinued that tire. That's why you're having such a hard time. The tire that replaced it is the way they refer to their tires now is they have the X line, which are drive tires, and those are duals. And they have the X1 line, which are wide singles. So if we use the X line, the duals, it is the Energy D is the name of the tire that replaced the XDA.
Okay, and that would be in a 24.5. You could get it in that?
I can't remember if you can get that tire in a 24.5 or not. the Yokohama Yuken, the Bridgestone M720 and M710, both really good drive tires, and I'm 99% sure you can get those in 24.5s. So you may want to look at the, if you can't get the Michelin Energy D in a 24.5, and I don't think you can. I think the best drive tire that Michelin makes in a 24.5 is their XDA3, which has a rolling resistance of about 115. Still a little too high for me. It's not a horrible tire, but you can do better. So I think what you're going to look for is the Bridgestone M710 and 720.
Okay, and you said there was a Yokohama also, would you know the number on it?
You know, let me go look and see if I can figure that one out real quick. I always have a harder time with the Yokohamas. I'm just not as familiar with them. They have the, in a drive with really good rolling resistance, they've got the TY517MC2. That's a drive tire with a rolling resistance of 102.
And that's a 2Y what?
TY Tango Yankee. Tango Yankee 517MC2.
Okay. Yeah, I'm trying to find the new ones, and I'm kind of stuck on the 24.5s. I do a lot of, hopper bottoms, and we dump in them swing out augers, and I need the height.
Okay. And now is the height in that case, is it fifth wheel height or frame clearance height that you need?
Well, it'd be like the hopper height on the bottom of the trailer.
Oh, so you could build up your fifth wheel.
Yeah, I could, but my truck right now is geared just right.
Okay. Yeah, you know, you don't lose much. It's only about 50 RPM, which really doesn't affect fuel mileage much, but the lower rolling resistance on the 22.5s affects fuel mileage a lot. So even though you might lose a little bit with the RPM, you'll make up more with the rolling resistance. If it were me, I would go to the 22.5s and elevate my fifth wheel instead. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The number to get a hold of us if you need to, 855-800-FUEL. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment, so I'm going to get right back to the phone calls. We're off to the Buckeye State. Herschel, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin.
What's on your mind today?
Question for you today.
All right.
I put new fuel tanks on my Columbia Freightliner, and after putting on the fuel tanks, I got to thinking, I think I'm asked 110 driver's side and 90 passenger side. I just thought that was weird. So I had 2 110s made and put on. After I did, I thought, I think fuel it because things.
You know, Herschel, I'm going to put you back on hold. You're breaking up so much, I was having a hard time understanding you there. So I'm going to put you back on hold. We're going to see if we can get a better line there. And I'll try to come back to you. So I am going to head off to Texas. Sean, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How are you doing today?
Good. What can I help you with?
Hey. Earlier today, I was listening to Dave Nemo, and they had one of their vendors from Blitzpath
Festo on. They were talking about engine coolant heating. And I was very interested that that gentleman was mentioning, and I think I caught part of the story, but they were mentioning that if you can run the heater at night to keep your engine and coolant warmer, when you start your truck, obviously in the morning, a warm engine, which is nice, but they said that that can cut your emissions down by 50%, which would, obviously benefit the EGR and EPF filter. Now, I was just wondering what your take on that would be.
Well, yeah, we've talked about that a lot. One of the things that kill a DPF filter is idling. So obviously by having the Webasto to keep things warm, you reduce the idling dramatically. That would really help the emissions and the DPF filter. Starting it warm has a benefit as well. I mean, that number they're using, I don't think could be just from the start alone. I think it's from the fact that you're not idling all night. But starting a warm engine, yes, will cut down on emissions. So every time you start the truck when it's warm, that's an advantage. I'm a big believer in the diesel-fired bunk heaters like the Webasto.
And I have one in my truck. I mean, I'm actually looking to build a new truck in the spring. And I never leave Texas. I have a leash, and I can stay within 100 miles of where I pick up and deliver all my loads. But I'm a big fan of not having a cold engine in the morning because, usually I track usually the first gallon of fuel. I usually get about 3 miles per gallon, even with my Cascadia. And then once it warms up, I'm at 8 miles per gallon.
Yeah.
So if I can spend $2 or $3 diesel to heat my engine and save $8, on extra fuel burnt, the cold engine, it adds up over the lifetime.
Yeah, the diesel-fired heaters make a ton of sense to me. And again, it's an option whether or not you want them to cool or heat the coolant in the engine as well. And I think if you're going to have the diesel-fired heater, you should have the engine coolant option because I think that's a really smart feature.
I'm going to get it done. I'm going to get short power with my truck. I don't need an APU because I'm home 4 nights a week. But if I can avoid burning extra D's, I will. Well, that's it. I appreciate it. You have yourself a good weekend.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Yeah, no question. I like the diesel-fired bunk heaters a lot. They're inexpensive. They're very inexpensive to operate. Heating with diesel fuel is cheap. I mean, it's just like home heating oil. It is. Diesel fuel is a cheap way to heat things. So using a diesel-fired heater for the bunk is a great idea. And yes, if you run cold climates, and that's why you would need the heater, then plumb in the coolant because it circulates the coolant, keeps it warm. Great for starting, much more efficient. And Sean made a good point that when you start a cold engine, you get a lot of emissions, a lot of soot, a lot of particulate that will clog that DPF much faster. But if you keep that engine warm when you start it, you don't have all those contaminants, much more likely to keep that DPF clean longer. I'm going to go back to Ohio and try Herschel again. Herschel, go ahead.
Hey, Kevin, you hear me now?
Oh, that's much better.
Okay, good deal. Anyway, I changed fuel tanks on my truck. It had a 110 and a 90. I thought it was weird to have two different sizes, so I put on two 110s. And after I did it and picked the truck up, got going down the road, I thought, boy, that's going to mess up my fuel gauges because I told the system that I carry 200, now carry 220. What do I do, if anything, because isn't that going to mess up my fuel gauges?
Now, do you mean the fuel gauge that's in the truck, or are you talking about a scan gauge?
No, fuel gauges, your fuel mileage tracking program.
Let me think about that for a second. We don't ask for the capacity in the system. All the system needs to know is whether you did a fill up or not. So it shouldn't matter. I'm trying to think if the first fill up could be off because of it. You know what? You know what I would do on your first fill up. Check that it was not a fill up. The first time you put fuel in using the new tanks, check that it wasn't a fill up. And what that does is it just resets the odometer so that the next time we do a true fill up, it's more accurate. Because I'm thinking that there would only be a problem in that initial changeover. And by checking it wasn't a fill up, that will reset the odometer so that it will be correct.
So am I understanding you want me to click partial, or do you want me to hit OD reset?
Hit OD reset. That would be even better. I forgot we added that feature just for reasons like this. Yeah, hit OD reset, okay. And then that way, the next time you go to fuel up, it will be correct. Even though the tanks are bigger, that's not going to matter.
Okay, and one more thing. Fuel level between the tanks right now, because of the new tanks being on there, I had some air problems at first because obviously the lines were all disconnected putting them on. Right now I have a driver's side tank that is full to the rim and a passenger side tank that is 5 inches lower than the driver's side. How close should they be? And if I have a problem, you got any ideas what to do about it?
Maybe. Yeah, the problem is I probably have too many ideas. This is a fairly common problem. And the reason I say I might have too many ideas is it seems like every single time somebody calls us with this issue, it turns out to be something different. It'll be the crossover valve. It'll be a clogged vent. It'll be a fuel line that's too small. Just weird stuff. And many times trucks will start doing this and then just fix themselves. It's like they get a vapor lock somewhere. I've had trucks do it several times. They'll start this uneven draining of the tank, and I'll be racking my brain and trying to figure out what it is, and then all of a sudden it just fixes itself and stops. So
how close should they be?
They should be identical.
That's what I thought. Okay.
Yeah, they should run pretty darn close to identical. Now the problem is sometimes the problem is created by the way the truck is drawing the fuel, and sometimes the problem is created by the way it's returning the fuel. Because remember, we pull fuel out of the tanks, but we also dump fuel back in. And sometimes this problem is caused because all the return fuel is going to one tank. Other times it's caused because all of the intake fuel is only pulled from one tank. So it seems like every time we have to address this problem, it turns out to be something different.
Okay, I'll keep an eye on it, and maybe I'll figure it out.
Yeah, check your vents. Occasionally, I've taken both caps off and let the truck run for a while, and believe it or not, that's actually kind of solved the problem. So it's really hard to say. You know what? I'm going to squeeze in a quick call here. Sean in Texas, go ahead.
Kevin, I just talked to you.
Oh, okay. That's right. That's right. Never mind. And I'm looking at the clock, and we're out of time anyway. So I'm going to wrap this up, and we'll call it a night. And we will see you back here next time. I do appreciate you taking an hour out of your time today and spending it with me. I know there's lots of things you could be listening to, and I'm honored that you chose to listen to our show today. And hope to see you back here again soon. Check out the website. It's letstruck.com. If you need any help from us, we have a whole team here of people just waiting to help owner operators and drivers with whatever you might need. So write down this phone number and give us a call. It's 855-800-FUEL, 855-800-3835. Check out the new recording schedule, and you can find this on the website at letstruck.com. Every Wednesday, Thursday, Friday afternoon at 1 o'clock, put a reminder in your phone, dial this phone number, and join us for the recordings. The number is 347-884-8327. And again, if you didn't get all that, check it out on the website. It's letstruck.com. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you back here next time. Be safe, be profitable, do the hard work, and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We'll be right back.
Thanks for tuning in to The Audio Road. If you have any questions, give us a call at 855-800-FUEL. That's 855-800-3835. Check out the website at letstruck.com and find us on facebook.com/letstruck.